Get ready for the Ocelli Effect. Ocelli.
And it is the 27th day of May, 2016. This is the Ocelli Effect, and hopefully you're hearing me broadcast live on American Freedom Radio at AmericanFreedomRadio.com. Do appreciate you tuning in, no matter how it is you decided to find us, via your Fondle Slab of choice, etc., etc., and your applicable application, so on and so forth. Anyway, perhaps I'm a touch loud tonight, and there may be a lot of noise on this show. I'm waiting on Lee Camp to show up. Now, he was supposed to call in. We gave him the call-in number, and he's all set. We're waiting. But meanwhile, I'm going to tell you guys something else. You can join in to this show, which is going to kind of go a little freeform. Nothing is scheduled properly tonight, so who knows who may arrive here very shortly. I know for certain that I have a confirmed guest in the second hour, which is Terry Joyce. And Lee Camp was confirmed to show up here today. But who knows, perhaps he's just running behind a bit. Anyway, we will add him right into the show the second he decides to call in. If you want to join in, the number is 218-339-8525. Once again, 218-339-8525. Now, despite the distractions going on behind my back at the moment and everything else, I also have an experimental line that is going to be added to the show, and I'm actually going to start working with it for news and recordings and stuff like that, and we'll get to that later on. Anyway, we may have, we may have Sherry Wisdom at some point here. We may have Jillian Treblecock. We may actually have Stephen Roberts. I can hear the excitement among all of you out there. We may have them join in as well. I've invited a bunch of people, actually, that gave me some very vague responses. So we don't know who is supposed to show up, except the main guy who was supposed to be here in the first half hour all by himself. From Redacted Tonight, RT, all that kind of stuff, stand-up comedian Lee Camp. So, you know what? I'm not going to sit here and focus on him. How about if we attempt to go right ahead and grab somebody right now? Let's see if we can grab Jillian, actually, first off, and see if we can bring her on in. But I do have to try and ask her to calm down in case other people end up on the call because, you know, I had this conversation with her the other day where I was explaining that the Skype noise gets a little weird.
At some point here, we may have Jillian.
There we go. There's me kicking back at myself, so Jill still has her player going.
Yeah, I'm switching. Hang on. I've got to switch to my headset. I have to switch to my headset. I can't hear a word you're saying.
Nothing.
So just a minute. I've got to muck around with my Skype. I'm sorry. It only take me a second.
No need to explain. You know what? Totally professional operation, and we can deal with this no matter what it is. So there it is, and thankfully I'm not hearing my own voice anymore. So it's all good, Jill. It's just fine.
Okay, and
it's
not. Say something.
Well, I am. What it's the other thing is that Sherry is supposed to be able to join us rather shortly.
That was my fault. I'm really sorry.
And so when she does, ought to be interesting as well. She may not be ready just yet. We shall see. But, you know, you guys are actually meant to have been a team on Monday night, and for the next few weeks, we're going to do it a little differently.
I can't believe this happened.
And we're going to do this without Jillian, actually. Now, Sherry is actually, here's the funny part, she cannot hear us, apparently, Jillian, right now. But Sherry, you can hear us, right?
Sherry, they got you.
I can hear you all. I'm here.
Yes. Okay. Well, Sherry can hear me, and I can hear Sherry, so we do have a part of a connection. And eventually, Jillian will figure it out, actually.
I think it's her headset.
Yeah, I know. It's funny because we're hearing her on mic. Meanwhile, that may or may not be Lee Camp on the phone now. You know, this is the beautiful part of it. I'll tell you what, Danny, if we could drop Jillian off the call because she can't hear what I'm saying, and leave Sherry there, and Sherry, just mute up for me for a little bit because I did want to talk to Lee Camp, and this was the intent from the beginning of the show, but things went awry. So if you wouldn't mind just kind of muting up, and I'll talk to Lee Camp, and you can rejoin me.
That would be fabulous. You just let me know. I'm listening.
Absolutely. So, Jillian, go ahead and hang up if you can hear me.
Oh, well, I just came in, so I only just heard. So would I do a hang up? Thank you. That was lovely to come here and hang up. I enjoyed
that
very much.
You will be back. You will be back. We're okay. Organizing this as we go, okay? So,
okay.
All right. So hang on, Sherry. Jillian, just hang up for a moment, and then let's see if this is who I expect this to be on the line. Lee, is that you?
It's me. How you doing?
Oh, excellent. Okay. You know, everything went just a little haywire here at the very beginning of the show.
Sounds like it.
Yeah, I thought I would have you, and then I had somebody who couldn't hear anything, but they were on the mic. It was just amazing. Anyway, look, I really appreciate you taking the time to join me, despite the fact that normally I'm in a slightly more professional state of mind, and things are running a little more smoothly. But everybody, this is Lee Camp.
How you doing?
And an amazing guy, really, because first of all, a stand-up comedian, and I always talk about stand-up comedians. I don't have very many of them on the show. I've had about three, I think. And generally speaking, you know, one of them is quite a bit of a cannabis activist, which is more the reason why I had her on the show. Another one was the guy who created the show Real People. He at one time was a stand-up comedian, John Barber. You know, and the other one was Reverend Bob Levy by listener request. I don't know if you've ever seen Reverend Bob, but these guys are, you know, the people that I brought on are actually more tame comedians than the people I really, really appreciate, generally speaking. But you, sir, are one of these guys that I've always found funny and extremely, well, let's just be blunt. I mean, you're very ballsy also. You say a lot of things that that a lot of other comedians would not say on stage. And meanwhile, instead of getting the backlash and driven underground, sort of relegated to, you know, the likes of only having to speak to people like myself, you end up on RT and doing some pretty interesting stuff, which I can see your fingerprints on some of it sometimes, because it's just part of it. Anyway, I'm going to shut up now, Lee. Because now we've actually gotten down to it. I mean, I was looking at some of the recent posts, and I just give you this as a setup. You know, some of the recent stuff that came out on YouTube that involved that, you know, team you're working with over there. And even in that sense, working through RT and all that, I still see that you're kind of out there. I mean, you're not calm like Tom Hartman, you know what I'm saying? And I wonder how it is, first of all, you get away with it, and how it is you actually have a career, because there is really some deep stuff that you're saying. You're not, you know, you're not all bubblegum and crap. You actually got some substance to you, which is unlike a lot of people in your profession. So how is it that you do that?
Well, thank you. Thanks for all the compliments. I tell you a lot of what I think is important shit. Not being covered on a lot of the, well, maybe any of the networks. And, I hope you see my fingerprints on a lot of what I say, because I write all my own stuff. So it's a labor of love, but, you know, there's a lot of stories that aren't getting covered. One of the big ones we've been tackling on Redacted Tonight for the past several weeks is the election fraud that's been going on. And you know, a lot of people are scared of it. A lot of, even a lot of networks that, or shows, let's say shows that, may, you know, be sympathetic to a Bernie Sanders run or an independent run or whatever. They still aren't covering it, because it's the idea that this system, this election system we have set up, is not working properly or is being somehow rigged is, I guess, too upsetting or scary or whatever for people.
Yeah, and every game is really rigged if you want to get right down to it. Anything that's got a high level of finance is truly rigged, which, again, is why I'm amazed that you get onto RT with this kind of material. Because, look, I mean, guys like me are stating all the time, I don't see how it is that that the wonderful Hitlery is even remotely supportable. Nobody I've ever encountered in real life, anyhow. You know, we see pundits on TV all the time, but nobody I encounter in real life is enthusiastically backing this woman who is allegedly winning, you know, one of the alleged two-party, and you notice how I keep having to use that word, alleged two-party seats to run for the POTUS. And
well, it is. I mean, what you're saying, what you're saying is very true and very incredible, because when you're online, I mean, I literally have posted things where it's like, look, I run into a lot of Bernie Sanders supporters. I run into a lot of Trump supporters. I can't list anyone that I've seen enthusiastically, even online, talk to me about Hillary. And when I post something like that, it's like, yeah, you might get a couple of people that are like, oh, I really love her. But honestly, a couple of people out of hundreds of responses, it's like, where are these votes coming from? And you know, these online polls after especially the early debates when she first was debating Bernie Sanders, he was dominating by 60, 70, 80% all these polls online about who won the debate. And then you have the media, our establishment media, going on and saying, oh, she won the debate. And you're like, who, where are you looking? What are you talking about?
Well, right. I mean, it's absolutely insane. And I'll tell you something else, because I don't care. I call things out when I see them, you know, and looking at the mainstream, I mean, I'm very, very disgusted by the mainstream in general. But even the talking heads that are hired to show up and have the arguments, you know, on the likes of, like, say, a Don Lemon show or whatever, where it's all about, well, gee, I'm on this side of the issue and I'm on this side of the issue. And now we're going to have a relevant argument to the actual things that are affecting people on the ground. You know, the truth is that even those that are hired, paid for to show up, you don't even see, you see it all throughout their body language. They're not even enthusiastic and they're getting paid. So, you know, even when you encounter a couple of people that say something to you about, well, I love Hillary online or whatever, it's kind of funny because I saw something that you put out about the paid trolls, right?
Yeah, we did a segment on Redacted Tonight a couple of weeks ago about, you know, and this wasn't, it wasn't a secret. It just mattered. The people just needed to report on it. But that there's millions of dollars being spent on these David Brock paid Hillary trolls that harass anyone, you know, harass a lot of the big Sanders support online. And specifically, there was one big moment where they were successfully brought down 7 to 10 of the largest Bernie Sanders Facebook pages the night before the Pennsylvania primary. And they did that by posting porn on the pages. So then Facebook has an automatic thing where they take the site down and they maybe then review what happened and then put the sites back up the next day. But that's the type of crap that's going on. And, you know, of course she says, oh, I have no contact with those people. But it is, you know, this should be illegal by political spending laws, except they don't apply to online stuff. So somehow this, you know, organization is allowed to spend millions on these trolls.
Yeah, well, you know, some people argue that the legal process hasn't caught up to the technology.
Right.
But but it doesn't matter, because truthfully, Lee, they keep inventing whole new ways to subvert every single aspect of the process anyway. You know, I don't find it shocking at all. And truthfully, hey, look, let's be fair and balanced for a second, right? Trump's friend there were, you know, running the Inquirer, making sure that he pumps out a nice Ted Cruz stories and things like that.
Right.
You don't think there's any collusion there or anything, do you?
No, of course not.
Yeah, I mean, come on. You know, and just attaching, you know, Rafael Cruz to the JFK assassination and all that kind of nonsense, you know, right there at a very pivotal point, not to say that I would be any sort of supporter. You know, listen, I'm not Glenn Beck, okay? I'm not going to go down with the Ted Cruz as it were. But, you know, when it comes right to it, the whole system is completely manipulated. It's being done in broad daylight. Like you said, it's not a secret. So, I mean, it's not like you're digging into deep intel circles in order to get this information. But nobody is willing to speak about it, are they?
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, at least with that, with some of that stuff that Trump did on Cruz, that's just Trump lying or his friends lying. But with the election fraud stuff, it's like, you know, we look at these unadjusted exit polls as to what the numbers are showing, and they don't match on the Democratic side at all. Most states are way off, meaning the exit polls show Bernie doing a lot better, sometimes winning the state, and then losing by 10 and 12%. And they don't add up at all. And then you connect that with the dots in various states like New York, where 90,000, 100,000 voters in Brooklyn alone. And she only won New York State by 300,000 votes. So 100,000 in Brooklyn alone are purged from the voter rolls, quote-unquote accidentally, and then people are fired for doing it. It's clear election fraud, and these channels are not willing, none of the mainstream media is willing to cover it or even suggest it. And, you know, I personally was attacked, and as well as Tim Robbins, because he tweeted my meme I created about the exit polls. So Tim Robbins and I were attacked in the Washington Post, and then various other outlets picked it up because, you know, how dare we have the nerve to ask these questions?
Yeah, right. How dare you have the nerve to actually, you know, call something for what it is.
Right.
I mean, that's what the bottom line is. And like I said, I find it amazing that you get away with even doing that, because I'm always under this strange impression, and help me through this a little bit. There's this impression I have that in order to keep your jobs on some of these networks, you know, you can't really make too outlandish a statement. You sort of have to be rather vanilla, you know what I'm saying? And, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, no, I can explain that fairly easily. It is that if you are on a channel, a TV channel that is paid for by advertising, then you cannot insult too heavily. That doesn't mean there can't be an occasional joke here or there, but you can't insult corporations, or especially the corporations that are paying for these channels, in any regular way. And so you might have seen a Walmart joke on Comedy Central, but you're not going to see a lot of them. And so any channel that has advertising paying the bills is not going to allow you to say this stuff. And they bring on people that they know or think are willing to do that. So I am on one of the few channels that is not paid for by advertising, RT. And, you know, there's a couple others out there, but not many. There's HBO and a few others. But it's rare. And, you know, then on top of that, a lot of these channels are picking people that say, you know, what they want to be said. So if you were picked by CNN or MSNBC to be on their channel, then chances are you've had a history of saying what they like to hear. A good example of this going wrong was where MSNBC brought on Cenk Uygur from the Young Turks. Now, Cenk does some pro-Obama stuff, but he does plenty of anti-Obama stuff because he says, you know, when Obama's wrong, I'll call him to task on it. So MSNBC brought him on because he's hugely popular. He quickly, within 2 months, became their second highest rated show, and they got rid of him because he was not willing to be a full-throated Obama apologist all the time, and that does not fit with their line of thought.
Well, exactly, and this is the disease that we're constantly talking about. I mean, again, these aren't your words; these are mine. But this is like a disease, as far as I'm concerned. There's a very tight control over what is considered to be the establishment media, and really, you are then left with very few options that actually have some power behind them, and now a slew of independents. You know,
Go ahead. Well, no, you're absolutely right. Like yourself, that are coming forward and people are getting the news elsewhere, which is the only reason something like Bernie Sanders, and I'm not saying everybody listens to you and has to be a huge Bernie Sanders fan. I'm just saying, and even to some degree Trump, although that's a completely different animal, but it's the only reason something like Bernie Sanders was able to happen with no media coverage. In the beginning, until maybe January, he was getting practically zero. They didn't mention his name. He was non-existent. Trump, on the other hand, although he is an unusual story, was getting 23 times as much coverage as Bernie Sanders, and yet Bernie was still able to develop this massive following and competition, to be very competitive against Hillary. And it's because people aren't listening to the mainstream media anymore. They're getting their news from your show and my show and various other places. And that's the reason that was able to happen. So you're absolutely right.
Well, and the other phenomena here, which I've talked to, various journalists and I've talked to various historians about this, and it is remarkable at this point in time that we're confronted with really such a disenchanted public that now Trump is a phenomena based on media coverage. He doesn't have to spend money on campaign ads because he is on TV all the time anyway. You know, this guy tweeters out that he did something. Tweeters, that's funny. Tweets out that he did something like, have ham and eggs for breakfast and they're commenting on it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I think it was either $2 or $3 billion they calculated he's had of free media coverage.
Right. And then you have Sanders, who had virtually none for most of the time and is still undercovered, regardless of how much support he has in the public. But what I see them as is very similar animals. They're not the same animal, but very similar animals in a media sense. And why? Well, because, again, people are so dissatisfied with the establishment politics that they have actually gone to some sort of a reaction. Now, you could say that they're both equal sides of the same coin, really. They're both sort of acting outside of the box when it comes to being establishment based, and Hillary, as she is, as far as I'm concerned, is effectively the perfect marriage between the alleged left and the alleged right. I mean, she's a neocon in so many different ways, and at the same time, presents herself as that classic liberal. I mean, I found it extremely humorous a few months back, actually, when the campaign was running this whole, scheme of, well, if you're a woman, you got to support Hillary, which is a completely outdated, outmoded way of trying to ramp up sentiment in the populace, right?
So, right. Anytime someone says that, I just ask them, oh, does that mean you supported Sarah Palin? Because you just support any woman?
Well, yeah, there you go. And I loved the commentary that came out right afterwards, which was, I don't allow my genitals to dictate who it is I decide to support in any way, shape, or form. I loved that, and I loved that reaction. That was a good thing that came out of that. But at the same time, I see both of them as the reaction to the controlled reaction to the anti-system sentiment.
Sanders and Trump. Yeah, no, it is absolutely anger at our situation because, the people can't survive anymore. There's been literally no recovery from the 2008 collapse. All the recovery has been in corporations and the 1%. So when you have all that money going to the 1%, the wages of the CEOs in the top have shot through the roof. And meanwhile, the wages of the workers are flatlined. And, people are paying off colleges for the next 30, 40 years. There's a fury in this country. And unfortunately, some of it's being channeled towards, anger and hatred towards other people and the neo-fascist kind of Trump movement. And then a lot is being channeled towards the let's come together, Bernie Sanders, Democratic Socialist movement. And that's not a new idea that's happened through time when societies begin to have tons of trouble and begin to collapse. People tend to go towards either fascism or socialism. So this isn't a new thing. Unfortunately, I don't know where it's going right now, but it looks like they're going to be able to rig enough of this election to get Hillary the nomination. But
yeah, it seems that way, and it seems that's the way it's going. So, the Trumpster dumpster fire versus the Clintonian age, right? And that's what it is. Now, here's the fun part as far as I'm concerned, because I gotta sit back and laugh every now and then, and I love guys who are able to, again, to have the courage to just go up on a stage with a microphone and nothing else. The fact is, you're going to have material for the next couple of years that's going to be produced by the MSM constantly, and it's just all about putting your twist on it. I think it'll write itself, Lee. What do you think?
Yeah, unfortunately, that's true. I would give up my career in a second if it meant that we could have a president that actually stood for anything outside of corporate rule. But, unfortunately, my material will be plentiful. I started one of my comedy specials at the beginning. I walked out and I said, it's been 2 years since I put out a comedy special. And since then, all the problems have been solved. Yeah, we're all good. Absolutely not true. They're all the same. Nothing changes.
That would be the farcical statement coming from the man doing it, and I love it. It's so great. And I mean, I saw some stuff with you talking about other issues as well, and doing it through scripted comedy. Like I said, I see your fingerprints on a bunch of things. I think the whole toddlers with guns deal definitely definitely had something to do with you. That's my suspicion. I didn't look at the credits, Lee, but just I'm guessing.
Well,
for the pieces that
don't feature me. So I pretty much write everything that comes out of my mouth. But on the other pieces, it's usually a collaboration. I know I had some input on that one. For those listening, we did a trailer for a movie called Toddlers with Guns, the movie that basically talked about all these toddlers with automatic weapons that were helping to attack the country. I don't know if I came up. I don't think I came up with the idea, but I think I threw in punchlines here and there. So.
Yeah, no, I know you had.
And that video featured Jean-Claude Van Damme. So.
Yes, it did. And it was awfully funny to me anyway. And not because, listen, here's the thing. I support people's gun rights. I really do. But, you know, there comes a time when sometimes it's about personal responsibility. And I'm going to tell you something. People who are dumb sometimes have children and do dumb things. Like allow their children, you know, you guys played a bunch of those news clips during that of, you know, toddler shoots their mother. The one clip, which was completely amazing, is the I think it was a 3-year-old that put a bullet through both his mom and his dad with one shot. And, you know, nobody bothers to ask. You know, everybody wants to argue about the guns. Everybody wants to. But nobody takes the time to say, you know what? Maybe we should address the idea that that people need a little bit of some kind of help as far as being parents, or maybe, you know, personal responsibility comes into this. I seriously feel as though, you know, you could give them a chicken leg and somebody's going to get injured if they're dumb enough. You know, and that's kind of the way it is. I mean, look, I had a friend who used to say that if it wasn't for Velcro shoes and bicycle helmets, you know, the population's IQ would be a lot higher. And, you know, I think about sentiments like that. And that's exactly what I think when I see news stories that, you know, the man bites dog kind of news stories, right? And, there you go again. You got plenty of material always, and the general public will provide it for you for your stand-up act, right?
Yeah. I mean, you know, on the guns thing, I think that everybody should be allowed to, in this country, have their handguns or their hunting guns or whatever else. But obviously, there's a, you know, certain number of laws that are good, and, you know, I like to see background checks. And the truth is that pretty much the entire country is for some kind of weapon control. I don't know hardly anyone who thinks that we should all be able to have, you know, nuclear bombs and tanks on our lawn. So if you're for some kind of weapon control, really we as a country are deciding where do we draw the line, what size of weapon. And I think that's an okay debate to have. You know, is it, or do we want people walking around with surface-to-air missiles? If we decide that's okay as a country, well, then that's where we'll be. But I think that that's what our democratic republic is about, deciding where to draw that line.
Well, exactly, and that's the way it's supposed to run. You know, interesting that that is the constant debate, is exactly, you know, and but what's funny is I think a lot of things get lost when certain things become an entity of their own in the discourse, you know, in the national discourse. When it comes down to issues like the mass shooting events and things like that, you know, people wind up going down a lot of other rabbit holes. And I find it equally disturbing, by the way the MSM handles it. It's about the gun. You know, and it's about maybe somebody needed even more psychiatric medications, you know, stuff like that. Then you turn to alternative media, and this is where I get, you know, a lot of flack. But right away they jump to it's all, you know, a false flag thing, and it never happened. There's crisis actors everywhere, always at all times. Nothing is real. You know, we are definitely in strawberry fields, right? And it's like, I can't hardly, I mean, I feel like the only guy sometimes who takes a step back and says, you know, first of all, within the first hour, 10 minutes, if you're on the other side of the country, you have no idea what just happened. Okay, so calm down. Secondly, you know, as these facts emerge, they are subject to interpretation. And not every event falls immediately into, well, this is an issue of gun control. This is an issue of mental health. This is an issue of, you know, sometimes people that are perfectly rational and sane and don't normally carry a weapon and have never been violent before in their lives, snap. I mean, this is just one of those things that happens. Number one. Number two, does the government and the news media lie to us? Sure they do, but it doesn't mean that every single thing is a completely fully staged cartoon for, you know, it, not everything is an episode of Family Guy, folks. You know, it's just that simple. And a lot of times there's a whole lot of shades of gray in between. And, you know, nobody ever gets to it. Everybody kind of latches down to their stand pat position that was pre-selected for them in one way or another. And it becomes a really weird kind of world to look at, depending on where you stand. How do you feel about the kind of extremism, you know, the extreme safety in the MSM, and also the kind of way outside of the box Never Never Land approach that comes out of the alternative media? I mean, where is the you know, where's the common sense, Lee, is my question, I guess. Oops. Okay, well, what is odd here is that I cannot hear Mr. Camp anymore. I don't know if he muted his phone. But listen, if you can hear me, Lee, either you could geez, that's interesting. Sherry, are you still with me?
I'm here.
I was having this incredible discussion with Lee, and unfortunately,
listening.
You know, I'm not sure what just happened there, but you notice I get into certain areas, and all of a sudden technical difficulties seem to emerge.
yeah, it seems to happen quite often. I mean, I'm trying to, I'm starting to think maybe it's not a coincidence, but I don't want to be the conspiracy person.
Yeah, that is always the difficulty, right?
Seems so.
I'm going to have to try and get him back real quick here. But, you know, Sherry Wisdom, by the way, who was on with me on Monday night, and we will be getting to Jillian shortly as well. But Sherry, this is an interesting point. Like, Lee Camp is definitely more, in my view, kind of in the vein of what it is you and I look at, listen to, and observe as real information. And it's really great to hear from somebody who is kind of in that middle ground where I think a lot of the common sense lies. Lee, are you hearing me okay? There we go.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what happened there, but I was kind of asking you, you know, between the extreme stances of the MSM and the
MSM. I heard your question, and it always amazes me when these people think there's never been an actual shooting in real life. Like, guess what? There are plenty of real shootings that go on, and it's sad because the people that are skeptical of the mainstream media, which is good, that's a good, healthy thing to have, are then willing to take the word of any nutball that confirms what they want to believe. And it's like, no, you should still want to get some kind of legitimacy or get multiple sources or something. Don't just take the word of one crazy blog that you found, you know, just because it says something you like. So it's like you should be skeptical of that as much as you're skeptical of CNN.
Exactly. See, this is why I really appreciate what it is you do, because this attitude not only permeates your appearances on television and what it is you do there, but it's right there, raw and in person when people go to see your stand-up. It is absolutely consistent. And I love it. I mean, it doesn't even matter, you know, if you're doing your observational thing or if you're discussing, you know, stuff that has nothing to do with what you might see on the news, but is just relevant to the real world. You really tackle it, and I really appreciate the way you go about it. Now, I know that you stated that you wouldn't be able to make it much past the time we're at right now, Lee. If you want to hang around for a couple of minutes, you can. If not, I understand and would be more than happy any time, by the way, to have you back on. But, you know, whenever time permits.
Well, I'd love to come back on sometime. This seems to be perfect timing for me to go because there's a fire alarm going off in the building. So I guess I've got to head out.
Wow, okay.
pretty crazy timing, but yeah.
Yeah, Lee Camp, everybody. Lee, tell people the primary place you'd like them to go to observe what it is you're all about or to contact or follow your work. Tell them where it is that you'd like them to go, because you're all over the place, so I don't know what the best place is. And again, sir, thank you so much.
Hey, thank you guys for what you do, because what you do is very important. My show is called Redacted Tonight. It airs every Friday. Then I have an interview show also on Thursdays, also called Redacted Tonight. But it's all really the quickest way to get it is all at youtube.com/redactedtonight. And if people are in Washington, D.C., we tape with a live audience. You just email redactedtix@gmail.com. You can come for free. And then the other good places to find me are at Lee Camp on Twitter or facebook.com/LeeCampComedian.
Absolutely. And once again, Lee Camp, if you don't know who he is, man, you got some Googling to do. Definitely an interesting guy and a guy I find extremely funny, by the way, not just intelligent, but funny and intelligent. And really, really happy and thankful that you came on the show tonight, sir. And you get out of there, because who knows if that fire alarm is for real or not. Oh, boy. A fire alarm going off in the building where Lee Camp is. Ay, ay, ay. You know, Sherry, you can't make this stuff up, can you? I don't know if you're hearing me, but you can't make this stuff up. He's got a fire alarm going. He happens to drop off the line, everything else. Hopefully we
can. Well, it always seems to happen. And then, of course, and then I kept hitting the mute button. It wouldn't let me unmute. I don't know what's going on. It seems kind of, like delayed, but it definitely seems like something's, interfering a little. Not enough to stop it, but just enough to be a little, you know.
Yeah, the Ocelli effect is definitely in the crosshairs of the great panopticon of electronic interference, I think. You know, we're not
the
main.
I think it's a good sign.
We're not the main target, but we are definitely being targeted by the array, the way I see it. Oh,
yes,
boy.
And if we weren't, then we wouldn't be doing it right. That's my opinion.
You know, that's the thing. In order to actually catch some flack, you have to be over the target. Perhaps we can get Jillian in here before we run out of time in this hour. But, you know, obviously we did that show on Monday where we discussed – Unpacking God. That was something that we did. But that show is not going to necessarily always be in the spiritual, esoteric realm. You will not have any clue what's going to happen. And for the next few weeks, actually, we're going to be without Jillian on Mondays. But hopefully, we can get Jill to drop back in about now and continue on with the discussion. I mean, look. Some people are saying that I'm getting feedback of all kinds at this point, that Lee Camp sounded like a gatekeeper and somebody that wasn't willing to really speak up and say a lot of things. But you listen to the way he does things. I don't know. Are you familiar with Lee Camp, Sherry?
Not as much as I would like to be, but I have heard some different lectures that he's done and some different and some other interviews. And I think that – for this show, I think he did It wasn't that he was trying to hold back. I think he was trying to be specific and not give any kind of misinformation, because that's something that I think right now people that are in our communities and people that are kind of running in our circles, it seems some are losing their minds and jumping into stories. And then I'm not sure, I don't want to go into like regretting them or things like that, but it seems like it's taking some of the validity out of the things that we're trying to put out there. And so it seemed like to me he was just being cautious as to what he was putting out, not trying to keep anything.
Oh, right. He was controlling himself so that he could maintain his own, you know, his own integrity effectively as a reporter, which is kind of a tough line to walk when you're also, you know, a comedian. All right, so there's a way of doing it. So I think the way that Lee does it is he does it with subtleties in a lot of cases, and he makes some pretty brash statements through his comedy. You know, maybe I misfired.
I like
here.
That.
Yeah.
It's like the George Carlin kind of comedy. I mean, it just, to me, it seems like sometimes that's the way to approach and really get people to start thinking, as opposed to if you're sitting there having a political conversation, people have more of a tendency to tune you out. So I think it's brilliant.
Oh, absolutely. And Jillian has definitely joined us. So Jillian Trebilcock, are you, hearing us now?
I am hearing you. Can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am. We were hearing you before.
I'm
that was
so
the funny part, but you were not hearing us, so you're sitting there talking to your mic like, I don't know why this isn't working. This is why I told them to hang up on you, because I'm sorry, but you know, you got your headset straight, so it's all good. And we did have a good time on Monday, as I was saying earlier, but for the next few weeks, actually, Sherry is going to do this with me without you, because you're going to be a little busy. So if for anybody who thinks that I'm getting rid of Jillian or something like that, that's not happening. She is going to be a part of the show as much as she wishes to be. So, but it's just that you have other commitments. So we're going to give it a try with just me and Sherry and see if we can hold down the fort while you're not there, Jillian. What do you think?
Oh, you're so sweet and lovely. No, yes, well, look, I'm actually finishing a degree in teaching, and I'm off to a school, and this is the hugest joke of all, that specializes. I've been given a teacher's placement for 3 weeks, and I have to go on a camp into the mountains with them. and the school, I googled the school. Oh, my God. I googled the school. And they have a specialty in fitness, and I thought, oh, boy, this is going to be hilarious. But anyway, I'm gone for 20 teaching days plus 3 extra, so I'll basically be gone for the month. So I'm delighted that you've got Sherry with you, and I think Sherry's absolutely perfect.
Well, you know what? It's everything is always as it's meant to be. So it'll be just fine. And but Jillian will be back on the Ocelli Effect somewhere doing something, I promise you. Anyway, did you happen to hear the discussion with Lee Camp?
I did. And you know, I'm a very big Bernie Sanders fan, and I actually had an argument with somebody who's very interested in bankers the other day. Sherry was present. This person was saying, look, Bernie Sanders doesn't want to, fix the banking system. So I went and did some Googling on Bernie Sanders, and he wants to break up the biggest banks, and he has no support from bankers, right? That's his policy. So, and I believe that, as gullible as I may be, but he often says the banks are too big. They have to be broken down into smaller businesses and smaller components. They're controlling the world too much. It's so much the 1% own all the big banks. And so I'm really glad that RT's talking about that, because I'm very concerned about the world, and America does lead Australia, which is, you know, you can tell by my voice, that's where I come from. We do follow Australia very much, and those big banks are in Australia, and they've taken over our water. They've taken over so many things, I don't even know what they've taken over. And so I'm a pro-Bernie Sanders person, and I'm happy to say so. And, you know, I've been wrong about everybody so far, so I may as well be wrong about Bernie Sanders too.
Yeah, I mean, I said some kind things about Sanders, you know, some months back, and I started taking a lot of flack. But you know what the truth is that I don't think any of these guys is going to accomplish anything because the presidency in and of itself is so subverted that it's really just a figurehead position. And, I mean, I'm not saying this from the conspiracy angle. I'm telling you that, you know, effectively this guy is nothing more than a greeter to the rest of the world for the American public. That's really who is going to be elected. And when I said guy, I didn't exclude Hitler either. But the point is that, because, you know, look, I question everything. Anyway, she is weird, though, because I think it's extremely fascinating that nobody seems to be her enthusiastic supporter, right? Oh, yeah, that's right, guys. I do remember with the Skype messages in front of me. The number, if you want to try and join into this, which, by the way, in the second hour, we'll have Terry Joyce on, and I'll see if these two ladies will also stick with me, and we'll have a rather interesting discussion there, I believe, as well. And there are others who are invited to show up here tonight that I did not advertise because it seemed as though it was the flakiest response to everybody that was supposed to come on tonight, with the exception of of Lee Camp, who did agree and then showed up a little late, and we had a little technical issue and so on and so forth. But all apologies aside, let's continue forward. You know, it is amazing to me that individuals who don't seem to actually have true popular support are allegedly winning in these selection processes, and nobody is bothering to pay attention to what's really going on behind the scenes. In fact, here's what I'm positing lately with guys like JP on Tuesday, and some other guests I've talked to this point. And in fact, it's going to be a very strange couple of weeks coming up, folks. Some of the guests I'm going to have, so stick around and stay tuned on that. But the fact is that it seems to me almost as though we have a situation where a third party candidate, if there's any legitimacy left to the selection process, could emerge and give us a rational solution to the discontent that is apparently evident among the populace here. I mean, a guy like Gary Johnson is not going to catch fire, you know, and obviously somebody would have to come in and partner up with a party that already has ballot access in the states and things like that, because it's late in the game. I understand the process, so please don't give me those comments while I'm saying this. But it almost seems like it's tailor-made now for a third-party candidate to come out of left field, and I'm wondering where he is. What do you think of that, Sherry? First,
well, sorry, I had to master the mute button once again. I'm kind of hesitant to put in my opinion, to be honest with you, because I feel like that. I've probably said this before, but I feel like that the election is already decided. I feel like that if someone were going to take my projection of it, Hillary has already been chosen. And so it's hard for me to kind of step outside of that box and kind of, well, what would it be like if, that's my opinion, but then I feel like that anyone who is actually running in these positions, maybe they do have some intent somewhere in them that they can make a change. Or maybe they just don't really care, and it's a, you know, it is just really a puppetry of manipulation and all these other things. But it sure seems like that they have such a vast range of insanity. Like, nothing is just in the middle. You've got Hillary Clinton, who we could go through a list of lies, and her husband and personal relations, and on and on and on. And then you've got Bernie Sanders, who a lot of people are going for, and I'm going to try not to completely slam him because I know Jillian loves him. But
you know, the bottom line is that, you know, he's claiming to be one of us, one of all of us, and oh, we're all the same, yet he didn't have a job till he was 40 years old and really didn't have to because of the way that he was financially supported by his family, who is also involved in the banking industry. So it's a difficult place. He may not be taking money. He may not be actually involved with it, but in a roundabout way, he is still affected and somehow probably still manipulated, in my opinion. And then you have... You know, I mean, it just, I'm not saying that his intent isn't good, because maybe it is, but it's hard to know what the people want when you've never been a people. That's my opinion.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is that we've entered a never-never land where there's absolutely nothing resembling a legitimate choice. And here's the funny thing to me. Initially, when this whole thing kind of kicked off full steam in 2015, which was very early for this kind of campaigning. But when that happened, my initial thought, and I very, you know, it's a well-known fact among people who listen to this show that I owe somebody a bottle of whiskey. I'm only waiting for the Republican convention to actually, you know, get on with it and give it to Trump. But at that point, I do have to deliver a bottle of whiskey to a guy who comes on my show all the time, because I picked Jeb Bush as the pre-selected horse on that side of the equation. Now, here's the funny part. And again, that's J.P. Satilli from NewsVandal.com, an amazing journalist who you can see on Consortium News and Truth Out and a whole lot of other places. But anyway, enough of that. The thing is that he even said it's kind of weird. He almost feels bad taking the bottle of whiskey. And why? Because I was sort of correct. Because the person that I imagined Jeb Bush to be is really – in the form of Hillary Clinton at this point. She is effectively a neocon who's going to continue on with the wars of aggression if given a chance. She's definitely in the pockets of the financiers, you know, specifically the bankers, the Wall Street, you know, the senator for Wall Street and all that good stuff. You know, she's always been involved in the game. She's certainly an elitist. And pretty much if you transferred all the things I had to say about Jeb right on to Hillary, you have, you know, with one minor exception, I don't think she was directly involved in the cocaine smuggling. But outside of that, you know, she might have been close by. But outside of that, I mean, you're looking at nearly the same person, you know, and therefore he almost feels bad taking it, because it's sort of like somebody infused Jeb Bush into Hitlery, and therefore we have the perfect candidate for the elites. What do you think of that, Joe?
Well, I sort of agree. I was having a bit of a chuckle to myself. I'm thinking, yeah, but they are different people. But you're right. They all belong to the Bush sort of syndicate of, you know, who really have been running the world for a very, 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 very long time.
Mm-hmm. No, absolutely. And listen, we're coming toward the end of this hour, but Jillian Trebilcock is with me, and Sherry Wisdom. And I'll tell you something, even if I just had you guys for 2 hours, it would be great. But it was a lot of fun talking to Lee Camp once we finally got it together. And do appreciate both of your patience, because I kind of turned to each of you. Here's the fun part. I turned to each of you and said, I need you, but I'm not sure when. So I put both of you on standby. This is how much I suck when it comes to trying to coordinate things. And couldn't figure out what I was doing when I finally decided to pull you guys in. Then he showed up, and I had to ask one of you to mute and one of you to hang up in order to conduct the interview. The reason is, by the way, it took me 2 years to get Lee to come on the show. He agreed to come on here 2 years ago.
Wow.
And something happened, and it got lost. So then I reapproached it last year. So about once a year, I ask Lee Camp to come on the show, and finally I got him pinned down.
So, well, it's wonderful, and he was great, and it's fantastic that he's working on RT, and there is that person who can actually walk in the middle, and it's very hard to walk the razor's edge, but true fringe dwellers do. They don't belong to any camp, and that really annoys people, but a truly free thinker has to freely think every thought.
Absolutely. So, Sherry, I hope you guys are both going to stick with us for the next hour, because Terry Joyce, who is a stand-up comedian as well, is going to join into the conversation. And I always love talking to Terry. And I know you guys are going to enjoy conversing with her. And who knows where the conversation will actually go from there. I have this odd, bizarre idea in my mind that cannabis will certainly come up in the discussion. I don't know where I'm getting that idea from. I may have some psychic influence over me at this point.
I was going to say, you must be psychic.
But anytime Terry shows up, pretty much that comes up in the course of the conversation. So this is an odd
sort of... Well, be sure and mention to her that I live in Colorado.
Oh, believe me, we'll mention everything to her, and you'll be able to mention it to her yourself.
Might be talking about cannabis an awful lot, but that doesn't mean that I can't be badly influenced.
No, but Jillian, you're here for the chaos factor anyway, so it all works out perfectly. The feminine chaos factor. So it looks like that's what we're going to do. I'm going to come back with three ladies on the panel when we return in the second hour of the Ocelli Effect, which is live, and you know it from all the little mistakes I made at the beginning of the show, here on American Freedom Radio at AmericanFreedomRadio.com. Stay tuned, folks. Oh, we're going to have some fun in the second hour, and hopefully you will too.
I like very much
radio.
You're an American institution.
American Freedom Radio.
Did you know there are 3 million edible food plants on Earth, and none have the nutritional value of the hemp plant? HempUSA.org offers you hemp protein powder. It does not contain chemicals or THC, is non-GMO, and is 100% gluten-free. Hemp protein powder burns fat, builds muscle, contains 53% protein, and feeds the body the nutrients it needs. Call 888-910-4367 and see what our powder, seeds, and oil can do for you. Only at HempUSA.org. HempUSA.org introduces 3 brand new detox formulations of micro plant powder. Brain Fuel for depression, bipolar disorders, and stress. Total Care, anti-cancer agent that cleans the liver and organs and increases memory. Rejuvenate, invigorates and heals the body, mind, and spirit. These products are your alternative to pharmaceuticals. Call 888-910-4367 and like us on Facebook. We ship worldwide. Only at HempUSA.org.
We all know that they're not telling us the truth. So stand up for your rights, demand the real medicine, and your right to use it and grow it. This is Rick Sensen, and you're listening to American Freedom Radio.
The last hour of American Freedom Radio you have been listening to is proudly sponsored in part by BigReggaeMix.com, the global healing station.
Produced by Mitch Santel and executive produced by none other than Errol Brown, winner of 5 Grammy Awards and the last producer and engineer of Bob Marley. Visit us now at BigReggaeMix.com for the latest show schedule, updates, and blog postings. And don't forget to follow us on Twitter, too. BigReggaeMix.com.
Guadilla will remain a dictatorship.
Or be quiet.
Why are you guys so anti-dictators? Imagine if America was a dictatorship. You could let 1% of the people have all the nation's wealth. You could help your rich friends get richer by cutting their taxes and bailing them out when they gamble and lose. You could ignore the needs of the poor for healthcare and education. Your media would appear free but would secretly be controlled by one person and his family. You could wiretap phones. You could torture foreign prisoners. You could have rigged elections. You could lie about why you go to war. You could fill your prisons with one particular racial group, and no one would complain. You could use the media to scare the people into supporting policies that are against their interests.
You're listening to AmericanFreedomRadio.com, the network who perseveres in delivering intelligent debate, constructive dialogue with true independence. The freedom to broadcast the truth is not free at all. So what is American Freedom Radio worth to you? The empowering information with fun, honest and pure integrity behind it provides an example to follow. Friendships to flourish with the moral altruism that pulls no punches. The hosts sacrifice and show remarkable discipline in their duty to deliver quality radio in service to the community with strength, wisdom, and loyalty. The founders of AFR wish to thank you personally for sharing your views and insights to make the best radio and alternative media. Now it's time for you to give something back and play a vital role in the future of America. Be as generous with us as we've been with you. Click on the donate banner at AmericanFreedomRadio.com or volunteer by emailing AmericanFreedomRadio.com. Vaccines, psychotropic drugs, and artillery batteries not included.
No rules.
No rules.
No taboo topics.
No taboo topics.
No fear of doom.
No fear of doom.
We are American Freedom Radio.
American Freedom Radio.
The system is designed to make you think anything is funny. Pretty soon you won't be able to buy anything with your monopoly money. Tell me,
what can I get with 2.3 trillion? 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 2.3 trillion.
In case you weren't familiar with the track that just played us in there, of course, that is Payday Monsanto, who I call a poet who doubles as a hip-hop artist. Anyway, I do appreciate you staying tuned here to the Ocelli Effect in the second hour. Now, I have carried over Sherry Wisdom and Jillian Trebilcock from the first hour. But the original intent of this show was to have on comedians, people that I thought had something to say of value and also happened to be funny. And, well, hey, look, I'm not a funny guy at all, so it is what it is. But I do appreciate stand-up comedians, that's for sure. And one of the very few people that I have ever had on this show who I can legitimately say is a stand-up comedian is, my guest is being added in now, Terry Joyce. Freedom of Joyce, of course, is on American Freedom Radio before me quite a few nights a week. And you'll also be able to see her blog at freedomofjoyce.net. I believe that's correct anyway. Terry, is that right?
Yes, that is very correct. Yes.
And I am a great fan of Terry Joyce because I watched that hilarious YouTube video about internet sex, and I just thought she was hilarious. And then I got to know her and listen to some things. And Terry, I am one of your comedy admirers.
Well, thank you very much. You know, that internet sex bit was based on real life. you know, I'm not going to lie, but I think the internet is definitely changing our sexuality. You know, a friend of mine took a picture of her cooch and sent it to the wrong person, and her mother was shocked. But it really is. I mean, it's different. It's the sex scene and all of that stuff. So there's a history to the internet and sex for sure. There's,
well, you know. We could discuss that, Terry, if you wanted to, because I definitely witnessed this evolution from the mid 90s to now. I mean, look, nowadays, just having a Skype account, I'm constantly confronted with, hey, baby, I'm 24 years old and I'm female just out of university, and I'd like to give you a free pass to my internet webcam show. You know, I get that constantly on the Skype, right? And stuff like that. We've gotten to that level of sophistication, but people forget really how, the internet actually revolutionized the porno industry, in my estimation, because you had a whole new way of being able to access that which, you know, used to have to go to the oddly set store in the strip mall somewhere in order to go to the place that had, you know, paper bags all taped up to its windows in order to go get your pornography, et cetera, et cetera. Once you could get your pictures, movies, and, hey, anything else you'd like delivered straight into your home one way or another, it sort of changed the whole pornography and, you know, sex toy, sex projection industry, didn't it?
Well, it did. And again, the porn business was kind of the forerunner to all of this in terms of websites and everything. I mean, it was the first out there in many ways. But the problem, it really hasn't helped the porn industry overall in terms of the ones where you make movies and you sell DVDs and the porn industry is suffering the same way in some ways that, let's say, the music industry suffered when Napster was created. It kind of put it into a strictly a chat line sort of sex or sex clips. Not that anybody cares about storylines or things like that, but, you know, the bigger stars are kind of, later on they've capitalized on it with their own websites and web presence and ways to make money. But people, the problem is they're not going out and buying a Hustler DVD anymore like they used to. So there is a drop, and I think there's a potential, there's a drop, and it was a drop in their market.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know,
yeah,
what?
I'm on air, Jazz. What?
Oh, Jillian is telling somebody she's on air, but
I just thought I muted. I'm sorry. I thought I pushed the mute button, but I was muted, and I put on air to
say. Of course you did. Of course you did. That's Jillian, of course. But back to the train of thought that was just derailed. it's okay. Here we go. It's interesting too because you know a little bit about this business.
I do know a little bit. You know, I'm embarrassed. I wish I didn't know as much as I do, actually.
But wait a second, Terry. It's okay because you know what? My listeners, the people that do listen to my show consistently and have been for a while, are fully aware that you and I dedicated an entire show basically to discussing your adventures in the porn industry. It's actually one of those episodes that's often referenced. People bring it up to me a lot whenever they go to, like, say, American Freedom Radio. They see that we're on the same network now, and they say, hey, wait a minute, isn't that the stand-up comedian lady that you had on that was in a porno movie and wrote a porno movie? And I go, yeah, that's right. And it's all from that interview, which is really funny to me. I mean, it's no big secret, but maybe you want to capsulize it for new listeners, Terry.
Well, you know, I did end up getting invited to work on an adult film movie called Hardcore Circus because I was friends with the director. Her name is Erica McLean, and her and her husband, Clive McLean, started the Barely Legal videos for Hustler. And at the time, I was, you know, asked to DJ at her party because I had a karaoke machine, and that's a whole other story. So that a friend of mine can sing at her birthday party. And I met her, and we got to know each other, and then we did a few other projects that had nothing to do with the adult entertainment industry. And then it ended up that she invited me to work on a particular movie that starred Blue Iris, who was a really fairly well-known stand-up comedian who was on Howard Stern. She was she did all kinds of prank calls and everything, and she had done granny porn. Okay, it's a long story. I mean, I didn't believe it.
I would qualify for that, couldn't I?
Wait, yeah, there's a market for it. And,
goody.
So if you can make it a show business, if all else fails, there's always granny porn when you're over 40, you know.
That's it. In case people are not aware, there are many.
Now we're grannies at over 40? Wait a minute.
Hey, listen, I didn't say it, okay? So you guys can get mad at Terry if you like.
Well, you know, it was going to be a vehicle for her, and, you know, I somehow ended up writing it. And then I ended up being in it. I actually wrote a non-sex part for myself, but a bunch of mayhem happened on the set, and so I ended up being in a scene
It's most of it's cut out, but all you do is you see me like, okay, wait, you're going to be, I don't want to be rude here, but I look at guys' balls who's dressed up in a mariachi outfit. And, you know, it's important because the balls are important, but I mean, okay.
That's the best phrase too. That's what I kept repeating on that show. I couldn't stop myself from laughing. And I said, you know, Terry, I have to agree with you that the balls are definitely important.
Talking of grannies and stroking your balls, this is exactly what an old, very sophisticated granny to me one day said to me. She said, oh, man, they just want you to hold their balls or stroke their balls. And it's so true.
Well, you know, the movie was AVN Award nominated. It's got Ron Jeremy. It got a lot of notice, and I'm like, great. And it is artistic. Some of it's a Super 8 black and white. It's very kind of almost Fellini-esque. Some of the scenes, the fantasy scenes, are done in steampunk, so it's very stylized.
Oh, and, well done. You're very brave, Terry.
But, you know, I will say this, that I'm working on a one-woman show or a comedy show about it, telling the story of it. I'm calling it Porn Star Virgin because I'm still a virgin in the porn business. I haven't really done the whole thing. If you look, there's a porn IMDb that I'm on, and it says BJ only. So, you know, hey.
There you go. Sherry, what do you think of that? I bet you didn't expect that to come up as a topic of conversation here with stand-up comedian Terry Joyce, did you?
Yeah, I have a pass. I have a checkered pass. I'm proud of it, all right? It means I'm not perfect.
No, absolutely. Sherry, what do you think of that after having been introduced through the YouTube and now we've gone to this part of the story? I mean, what do you have to say there? Sherry?
I think Sherry's having trouble because she's got a house guest at the moment. And
okay, no problem.
And that house guest was what made it trouble for me to come in because anyway, blah, blah, blah. But look, I'll give Sherry's opinion for the minute because that is actually part of your appeal, Terry, because you've just now taken exactly the same approach to being a porn star virgin that you did to the internet sex. It's that same, and actually I really relate to that because I'm a Virgo, for want of a better way of explaining myself. I'm actually very sort of shy about those things, and I actually have never had phone sex or internet sex. It's just the way I am. But the way you do it, but also, you know, you get flirted with, and of course sometimes people do manage to seduce you, but then you run away, you know, and you don't go, I'm not going to have sex with some stranger on Skype or whatever.
Right.
You know? Exactly.
Only people you know, right?
Well, in real flesh.
NSA, okay, NSA,
just to clarify.
NSA, take a look at this, man. Are you recording? So.
Exactly. You know, like, we don't need to be completely objectified. And, of course, women do still look worse when they do it than men do.
Well, it's, you know, if you are having Skype sex, you do want to try to get the right lighting and make sure that your belly doesn't look too big, and sometimes you see the camera back at you, you're like, oh my god, you just don't even want to look at yourself, you know? Don't look at your own box. Look at the other box.
Yeah.
looking at boxes. Okay. You know, now we've gone into some pretty strange areas here, and it sounds a little revealing, Terry, because it sounds to me as though you may have gone through some trial and error on this.
Well, after a while, you do learn a technique. That's all I'm saying.
Okay. I cannot argue with you. I did not expect this. Like I said, we're going to have some fun here, and here we go. Isn't this interesting? But there's a difference between men and women doing this on Skype, huh? Okay, check.
I will keep that in mind.
If
you are going to do it, though, I do suggest you get a camera, you know, one of the, you know, the external webcams that you can move around that's not fixed, you know.
Okay. So at least we're getting helpful technological tips on this show.
I'm sure people out there who are listening know what I'm talking about, all right? I'm not surprised.
Well, I have no idea. I'm sure I'm going to hear plenty about this later. But but as for right now, who knows what they're thinking?
Can we talk about JFK again?
Oh, here we go. Yeah. Well, see, now that was a little slide at me real quick there.
Let's go back to chemtrails or you know, I'm kidding.
Oh, you just got wonderfully loud, Terry. Perfect.
Oh,
wherever
I did?
You just were, yes.
Okay, then I have to hold it up like this. I'm on a new iPad Mac, but I am going to get a little microphone and a headpiece for it. It's brand new, but I'm trying to figure out where's the mic at. I still don't know where the mic's at. Oh.
So Terry has not figured out how to obviously do this with the new iPad that she has yet, but she has figured out that a remote webcam is helpful when actually soldering with the video. Okay, well, listen, it's all helpful information.
This is my first show with the Mac pad. Yeah,
right. Now, of course, I was talking to Lee Camp in the first hour about what it's like, you know, because I'm always amazed, and I do have a lot of respect for stand-up comedians especially, because they go out with just a microphone and themselves and their wits, and they have to deal with an audience live, you know. It's definitely a different animal than broadcasting. It's not like being a musician. I mean, I did some spoken word stuff, but you know, that might as well have been music the way it was done. And you don't have that interplay with the audience, you know, like a stand-up comedian does. And I always find it interesting when somebody who does that for a living begins to go into serious topics and starts to say things that don't seem to be conducive to having a, you know, a flourishing career in the mainstream sense, right?
Yeah.
And I know you have experiences on both sides of that, and I know you do mention it on your show, because I catch some of your shows, that, you know, you were on Last Comic Standing.
Yeah.
You'd been on television and things like that, and I mean, you have made a career out of being a stand-up.
Yeah.
And at the same time, you've taken some stances on things like cannabis and so on and so forth that have been, well, kind of against the grain in a mainstream sense. I mean, what was that like for you? Because, you know, Lee basically said to me that the only reason why he can do half of what he does is that he's on a place that isn't, you know, dependent upon commercial funding.
Right.
You know, I don't know what your thoughts are on that, but I'd love to hear.
At this point, I would say that's the same situation for myself, because once you start to become anti the agenda, and oftentimes, you know, the agenda of the entertainment industry that you're part of, they don't want to give you a microphone anymore on their camp. You know, I think so. I mean, I could still work comedy clubs and be in front of audiences. And the issue sometimes also with that is, you know, I kind of outgrew what I was talking about. Like, again, when you do clubs, you're going to need a certain repertoire of things that people wanted, that they respond to, unfortunately. And then, you know, then you take them into the things that you really want to say sometimes. It's like, you know, every comic has a bag of dick jokes in their bag or whatever you want to, you know, say this or throw out in that sort of nightclub atmosphere. My thing that I want to do now is, you know, have the audience that I'm talking, that are listening to my shows on Freedom of Joyce or here on American Freedom Radio or other platforms, you know, that I have out there, and talk about the things that I'm talking about currently, and getting a message out there that makes a difference. I think that, you know, you make a choice what you want to do, and for myself, I would rather I've always been kind of alternative anyways, even when I was working on the other television. And so I just go with the reason to do this is to tell the truth now. It's not
not to do it so that I can, you know, get a sitcom or, you know, constantly have, you know, because it feels good to hear laughter. You know, it's like now, the only thing I think about is, being a part of, the positive progress that is, that is taking place on, taking place right now, what we're doing.
Right, right, exactly. But, you know, the fascinating part of that to me, again, is how there is subtleties. There are nuances to what someone can do with their art form to introduce some of these really very serious and hardcore ideas, right? And that's something I know you did in a public way as well. And that's what I was applauding Lee for doing, because almost always he seems to have a way of doing that where he slips in a pretty deep message into something that has kind of a shallow appeal to it. Like, okay, let's break down your internet cyber sex routine a little bit.
Right.
If you think about it, I mean, this is – now maybe I'm just reading too much into it, and I've been told that many times. You know, I see you making a statement about, you know, exactly how ludicrous it can become – if you get overly involved in something like that. That was the message that I thought was part of the subtext to what you were telling people. And I,
well,
and
yeah.
I see, yeah.
I mean, yeah, I mean, yes. And also there is, you know, and that's why, one of the reasons why I want to tell the story of Porn Star Virgin, because, you know, I'm interested in the layers of our sexuality, as women. And what it's like, and the absurdity of some of it in a way, and also, and I don't mean to, and I don't mean this in a bad way, but we're women's sexuality is often objectified, in many different ways.
Misunderstood.
It's used for advertising, or, you know, it's used as power. I mean, there's power in sex, and it's a very primal urge on the planet. And I think that part of the evolution of us, you know, humanity, maturity of our sexuality and our healthy opinion that we have about it is an integral part of it that is suffering from. You know, sexual abuse and pedophilia and, you know, and many, many other things, not just those things, but just our social and religious morals that have been inflicted upon people. And I don't think that we understand in many ways the energy exchange between a man and a woman and how that can manifest things. And, you know, it's still kind of a mystery. And I really kind of think that it's been kept secret on purpose. Because
oh, absolutely, Terry. You know what I see, and I want to kick this around to the other two ladies here on with us after I say what I got to say, which is very simple. I think that all of our natural processes as human beings have absolutely been purposely warped, okay, in order to keep us from having the knowledge and the peace that we could have if we were simply left undisturbed. And I think that counts for men and women. There's a lot of traumatic programming that goes into, you know, not only the objectification, but, you know, the systematic belittling of individualism and things like this. You know, there's very much a herd mentality that's supposed to be attached to something that's very much a part of your individual character. As a human being, I think men and women both have been misled to believe that they have to fall into certain areas, and also they've been led to misunderstand themselves to such a point that that it is entirely disconnected from the reality which all of us are actually experiencing. And I guess first I want to try to kick it over to Sherry if she's available and see what her viewpoint is on that. Okay, perhaps she's not. How about you, Jill?
Well, I was sitting here thinking, well, so I have to follow this concept, and the concept being that we don't understand our sexuality, and you think that women have been men and women don't understand their own sexuality. Is that what you're saying. I think pornography is actually a really bad thing for sexuality. That's my first comment. I think pornography is hilarious. People don't need pornography. They need other real-life people and human contact and heart connection. And sexuality is a natural part of your being. It will arise.
Well, you know, to answer the pornography thing, I think that pornography wouldn't exist if we didn't have these misconceptions about our own sexuality anyway. I think that's the way that, you know, chicken and egg particularly go. But again, I'd like to, if you got more to say on it, go right ahead. But if not, I'd like to try and get Sherry's thoughts.
Well, she can't get her mute off. For some reason, her mute has happened over there.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
Well,
so
as soon as she gets it, as soon as she gets it off.
But I can ask Sherry questions if you like. I mean, I can ask Terry. You're gone.
No, it's okay. If Sherry wants to pass you questions for Terry, go right ahead.
No, I'm saying I would like to talk with Terry directly.
Yeah, go right ahead.
Oh.
And ask Terry some questions.
Okay.
What do you think about pornography, Terry? Like, in all sort of different levels of it, like from soft porn to hard porn and, you know, Germanic porn and what's that stuff that you use, Viagra porn and, you know.
Well, you know, I think that that porn is missing the other aspects of human sexuality in it. There's a lot of storylines and interaction between people that is often disconnected. And in that sense, I don't think that it's good. I don't really have, I'm going to just be really honest. I don't really have a problem with depicting, sexual storylines or, you know, scenes or obviously I wrote it or I didn't write the sex part. I just wrote the interaction, the unfolding of something.
But you had a creative input into that, whereas most pornography is a bystander just watching something on a television.
Well, I mean,
or, you know,
there's a difference between, like what we did and internet porn where you have a girl who is, you know, maybe on drugs that is, you know, around some creepy guys, doing stuff in a chat room. I mean, there's a difference between that And I consider doing what I was doing because like what I was doing was still like it was a film. It did have acting involved in it and costumes and lighting and things that but it happened to be where the actors were actually really having sex and I'm not saying that this is I think that there are erotic movies that have been huge hits on film that I happen to like. I mean,
I'm not anti them.
Body Heat is an old one. You're looking at Nine and a Half Weeks is classic. A lot of some of the Zalman King type of shows. I mean, I personally enjoy watching them. I've always kind of been a fan of that kind of filmmaking. There's a whole history about the adult film industry that it falls in line with the First Amendment and censorship and our Constitution and there was a time where there were certain movies like Behind the Green Door or The Devil and Mrs. Jones, like way back when the suburban housewife would go to the theaters that they had there. And at that time, those movies were actually, they were intended to make a statement. It wasn't just particularly about sex, per se. So, I honestly, Santa Barbara University was teaching adult filmmaking at their college courses because it is considered a film art. So there's a blurred line between all of it. In some ways, I think maybe
helping somebody, you know, seeing sex that way or being in touch with something like that might help normalize some people who might have, you know, hang-ups or not be able to be with somebody or need some sort of outlet or something. At the same time, it could be very destructive because somebody could be completely lose their mind and be addictive and not be able to have healthy, normal relationships. I think it's more about how you're creating something, what the message is in it, what you know. I think that maybe if there was a adult film that the characters had, people had sex in it, and it was about real human, a real story, a real human contact that had love and all the other elements to it, just think about what that might do in a positive way for people to look at something like that. So I try not to totally judge one thing and say that it has absolutely no value. I think all art in some ways has value to it. It just means that some art might be a little bit more cruder than others.
What do you think, Sherry?
But, you know, that's my opinion.
Well, I guess that it's an interesting subject for me because it is as hilarious as I think it is, and Terry, when I've listened to your YouTube video and some of the interviews that you've done, you truly are funny. And it brings up, like, you'll say things that are shocking to me. As a woman, you just are not, you know, I'm 45, I'm not 20, I'm not 50, but it's like I'm at that age where, like, we were taught, you know, you can say some, I don't know what you call it, like risque things, but you seem to just kind of blow it up, and the way that you do it is so nonchalant and so flowing and like it's just completely natural, and which it is, it should be. And that makes it more funny to me than some of the other comedians that are actually trying to be maybe a little more vulgar or trying to pull out more of the shock factor. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Well, I do it because I really have a rebellion to be able to say what I want. And in a sense, you know, I think that being able to speak as honestly as you do the way I go on stage is the way I'm going to talk to my girlfriend or my mom, all right, or anybody else that talks to me. You know, it's not going to be something that is doing you know, for effect. I think that one of the reasons why it's kind of funny is because it doesn't look like it's going to come out of me.
And so, yes,
right. Okay, that's why
I was.
Funny.
Right. Yes. And that was funny. I mean, I enjoy dry humor also, so I kind of like the approach maybe of not being so obvious about everything, but everybody knows what you're talking about.
Uh-huh.
And I thought you had that mastered very well because I think where things get lost for me, and this is where I am not a feminist, but I also – it pisses me off when I see that women themselves are so willing to stand up and spread their legs like it's a show as opposed to it being the core chakra of their being. I mean, that's my thing. I'm not saying,
get that because, you know, I've joked around a lot, like, oh, I'm a big slut from way back and stuff like that. But the reality is that I'm not really that anymore. I mean, I'm not saying, but I am.
Not anymore. Me either. I did that already.
You know what I mean? I stood my own. Trust me.
Okay, so I'm on the round table. I'm on the round table of retired sluts. Then is that correct?
You are.
Okay. Just checking. Okay. Sorry. Don't let me interrupt. Go ahead.
I retired.
Come after fire. Depending on
you
go.
After a while, you're like, no, I've got to grow up here. I mean, we lived. I mean, if you're saying you're 45, we're in the same ballpark. We're all kind of in the same, you know, ballpark here, right? I hate saying what my age is for sure, but I got this guy. This guy's on Facebook. What's your age? What's your age? What the fuck do you care? Like you're like something's gonna happen here. No, I don't think. You know, it's like none of your business. You know, I mean, like I don't think I have to tell people
because
that.
Because they
know
every time.
Right. Okay. But somewhere in that ballpark. You know, we had mixed messages. We had different messages. There was like, you know, my mom's generation was, you know, the pill. She, you know, it was like, oh, now you're open to do whatever you want sexually. It's okay. It was the 70s and all that kind of stuff. And then, you know, you go on and, you know, I would say I was an 80s person, you know, 70s, late 70s, early 80s. Yes. My sexuality came into the 80s, right? So,
yeah.
there was a different philosophy. There was, you know, there was this thing like, oh, just go ahead. It's different now. And even now, if you look how young girls are being integrated into a sexual way, which I don't really agree with. I think that they're, now we've lost a certain kind of innocence that I think that young women and children, or I mean, not just children, but young women that are coming of age, maybe need to be taught a different way that we can look back and go, you know what? Maybe it's not so cool that we, you know,
well, it's almost, don't you well, feel like it's almost like, or don't, doesn't it seem like to anybody else, maybe just me, that it's almost like these young females are trying to come into balance with something that we thought was inappropriate to begin with. It's like, you know, these men, I don't want to tag out men and females, but it seemed like young boys, if they're out screwing everybody, they're announcing it and they're the studs.
Right.
But then you've got the young girls who are spreading their legs for everybody and they're the sluts. Okay, fine. But it's like now all of a sudden, instead of it coming into an equality of having respect for each other, now we're all just doing it the same.
Right, you know, now, my guys, basically. That's also a message. I mean, look at it. I mean, like, even there's the push to, when women went into power and work, you know, the Gucci power suit and, you know, all that business ball busting kind of chick, you know, in order to be in, you know, the working world. There's all kinds of different messages out there.
Well,
Oh, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, if you don't mind, I want to step in and give you a little bit of a male perspective coming in that same ballpark, too.
Okay.
Because I was born in 72, so there you go. I don't care. I'm 44. Bottom line is that it was a very confusing time growing up there. Because you had your older male role models who seemed to believe that things were, you know, pre-pill and pre, you know, equal rights and that kind of thing. And then you also had the flip side of that going on at the same time where, quite honestly, as a male trying to interact with the females that you were attracted to when you were younger, you had a bit of a hard time because you didn't know if, let's just use the dumbest example possible, you know, the idea of like holding a door for a woman, this kind of thing, you would think that this would be an innocuous act. Now you would find some females in my age group who were completely appreciative of that. And then at the same time, other ones that would want to smack you upside the head. Cause what, you don't think I could open a door on my own? You know, and at the same time, there was another sort of backlash to that that was dysfunctional. And as I got to be an adult, I learned how far it went. I mean, there are women who have absolutely no clue how to cook. And I'm not saying that they need to cook for their man, but it would be nice if they could cook for themselves. But, you know what I'm saying? Like, in other words, it almost got into a completely confused camp where there was no generally accepted norm at all. Not even that, you know, society could kind of agree to with one another in the most basic sense any longer with how you were supposed to behave as a man interacting with women. I mean, obviously there's, you know, certain lines you don't cross and things like that. I mean, I always erred on the side of caution as best I could. But honestly, it was very confusing. You didn't know if you were doing something, sometimes if it was going to be appreciated, ignored, or you were committing an offense. You know, as a male, it was very confusing at that time. And,
well,
you know,
it helps to know the woman. If you knew the woman a little bit, you might be able to find that out, Chuck.
Yeah, well, good luck with that one, because every time I try and – anyway. you know, trying to get to know a woman, that's a sort of – all right, look. Everyone is an individual. That's absolutely true, and it doesn't matter what genitals they possess or how they identify themselves. Everybody's an individual, and to try and get to know every single individual, even in the process of doing that, you're not allowed a learning curve. Or at least you weren't.
Oh, hang on a minute. You're just copping out here because, I mean, we're talking about one-on-one if you're talking about that. I've got – if we're talking about sex.
Well, if we go back into the sex area here, there was behaviors. There were behaviors that were acceptable, okay, at one time that were no longer acceptable in physical approaches, in assumptions, you know, like, gee, you know, you've been on a certain amount of dates or whatever, so therefore it might be okay to try something, you know, or if you live with somebody, maybe, you know, you have certain assumptions about things or et cetera, but it's sort of like it's always been a state of confusion. And I got to tell you that just because, you know, they don't want the door held doesn't mean they don't want you to pay the check. And just because, you know, just because, they are very difficult to get to go out to coffee doesn't mean they won't go right to bed with you either. You know, it's, there's no kind of logical set that goes along with it. I've seen it run all over the place, and absolutely every woman's an individual. So I sit there and go, I have no clue what to do with brand new female, except sit back and let them tell me. And the argument, of course, is that I should have already figured it out, and I should just absolutely know what to do anyway. So
stop there.
But the thing is that it's the same way for females, Chuck. Here's the thing, it's like, you know, you say that, and like, oh, well, you know, for like, it's sick, like, women are such a mystery. And I'm thinking to myself, well, of course we are. But on the other hand as well, it's like, so are men. You've got some men who, you know, who want to act like they are, you know, hung to the knee and they're full of testosterone and they're so cool and they're this and that. And then they won't pick up the check. Or they won't hold open the door. Or then you've got, you know, the guys that are running around that are driving the fast cars. They've got these great jobs and they're doing all these things. And then they're addicted to porn, or they've got some weird habit to where they're, you know, into some weird sex thing that all of a sudden comes up three dates in. You know, so it's just as confusing, I think, for women as it is for men.
Well, why don't we actually just give Chuck some advice?
Are we qualified for that? I mean, I just want to say.
Uh-oh. Terry.
Women.
Terry.
Go on, Terry.
Chuck has it kind of right, though. It's like, you know, you got to take it on each individual woman. I mean, I think it's the same way with men. I mean, when you're dating a man or you're seeing a man, every person has their own idiosyncrasies, and you know, you begin to you know, in the beginning it's like, oh my god, they're so great, and then you're like, bump, okay, can I accept this, you know? And then it goes down, like, you know, that, you know, you go down your freaking checklist, you know.
That's so true and funny, though, because everything they do in the beginning is, like, fabulous.
I mean, everybody has, you know, and people will want different things. I mean, of course, there's certain standards, certain ways of relating, but in some ways, it's almost like having a clean slate in some ways every single time that you date or stop. And I totally relate to, you know, going on the third date and they just came out with this bizarre thing and you're like, no. You know, it's like, you know, there's a lot of times where you look at the situation, you're like, no, it's not happening. Did
he just say that?
Right.
And that's when then you go, like, you're at a restaurant and all of a sudden you're like, I have to go to the bathroom, make sure you collect all your things and go out the back.
Yeah. So, hey, but it's part of what is. It's people trying to find the right fit, hopefully, in some ways.
Well, because maybe sometimes they say something and you're like, you know, so it could be, you know, maybe that is your thing, too. And if nobody ever says it, then you don't know that you've got that in common.
Yes, that is true.
Perfect. But, you know, there's nothing like interviewing people, and I don't mean interviewing people in a formal way, but asking what they think. You know, I mean, usually they'll say, look, I really fancy you, or, you know, like, that's what I find is the case, is that they actually tell you that they care. And then, you know, I mean, that actually helps.
Well, that's because you're talking to men and therefore you get a direct answer.
Well, but, you know, telling somebody something and then actually doing that or showing or being it is two different things. Some men give a lot of lip service.
That's true. God. That's true. That's equal, and there's equal opportunity on that. You get a lot of runaround from somebody who just kind of goes, you know what? I woke up this morning and decided.
Oh, God. But if you're a really honest person, which I've actually sort of am innately, but have also trained myself to be, and then that's when you actually just naturally assume that the other person is really honest, and then you can get sucked in by the spin doctors and that.
See, now we have actually struck upon the root of the whole thing, which is a level of honesty. Okay, so notice I didn't apply it to either gender here. There's a level of honesty that has to be there or not be there as far as you're concerned. And let's be blunt right now. There are some people that want to be lied to as well. So they need to find themselves somebody who's going to lie to them just the way they like it. And then there are other people.
Why do people want to be lied to?
It escapes my understanding, Jillian, but I observe it. What was that, Sherry?
I want to be lied to. I know that sounds terrible, but I'm a very honest, upfront person. If somebody asks me the truth, then I feel obligated to tell them. So I don't ask, and that means don't tell. So, like, if I'm not looking right or something's, you know, I don't go around asking, does this look okay on me or whatever that deal is. So if I'm not asking, I don't want somebody to tell me. And,
so that's
you know, especially a man that you're trying to impress.
Sorry, but that
do
ties
what?
In with you. That ties in with you saying, you just say, I'm going to the bathroom, and then you escape out the back door. I mean, why can't you just say to them, I'm sorry, look, this doesn't feel right. I've just got to go. I'm sorry.
Because how it would come out of me is like, oh, my God, did you really just say that? You know, that's weird as shit. I mean, like, I just can't. I have my filtering system is I've learned I don't really have one, so I just say nothing and try and escape the situation as fast as possible.
See, there it is. The key actually is. No, I didn't say you were shallow. I didn't say anything. But there is a key here. There is a level of honesty that is incumbent upon certain people, and it varies quite wildly. Okay, here's an interesting thing I can tell you from watching secondhand. I used to know a guy, and I'm not going to mention his name, who was a musician, and I was a musician at the same time. And I literally watched this guy when he would lay his eyes on a woman. He would walk right up to her, and basically, without sounding crude here, I'll tell you that he would just pretty much come out and say, look, you want to go to bed or not? Okay, this guy would do that. And
well, it worked.
But here's there's the back end of the story.
I think it depends on the woman, because I've had that happen, and every time some guy does that, it turns me off. I never say yes. I'm like,
but,
what? Oh,
but
no.
See, that's you. But that's you. Now there
but
are.
I see him do it.
But yeah, I don't like it.
But there are women out there who are looking for that direct approach. So this guy definitely was, you know, not a lonely guy or anything. I mean, you know, he got drinks thrown at him occasionally and things, but was never a lonely guy. And there you go. There was a direct level of honesty there where he didn't even bother to even ask their names first. That was the first thing that came out of his mouth. And on some levels it works. So here we go. There is a level of directness and a level of honesty that everybody is looking for. And the only way to get to know it is to experiment. You know, and that's the way that I see interactions anyhow. You guys can call me crazy. I definitely want to hear about Terry's view on that.
Well, I think that's a
good... Well, see, the thing of it is like when a guy does that, he doesn't want to know your name. He just goes, oh, do you want to go to bed? Well, that guy basically, that's sex. That's, you know, that's like, I'm like, to me, I'm like, what? You know, how dare you? You know, it's like... And maybe that's because that's not what I'm looking for something else. You know, I don't, how many people out there had a guy walk up to, how many women out there had a guy walk up to him and go, do you want to fuck or what? And then, and you go, yeah. And then you marry that guy. What are the statistics?
I have not taken a poll lately, Terry,
that
but
great.
I'm
mean,
going
really.
To assume.
But okay. So here's my question, Terry. Yeah. So here I have a question, and this is kind of this is an 80s kind of thing, and I'm not there now, but I can remember feeling this way, especially in my late 20s. It was like I was watching men kind of, you know, go out and do that type of thing, walking up to women after they've had a few drinks or, you know, whatever it was, and being very macho and women falling for it and all this stuff.
And I kind of went the opposite direction as far as, like, I started doing that type of thing to men in a weird way, not going up to them and saying, hey, you want to fuck, you know, that, not that extreme or anything. But, I mean, being so,
Making that decision in the first 5 minutes and pretty much following through with it. That's what you mean.
Well, that was there. Otherwise, there was no purpose. You know what I'm saying? If that's... Mm. And, you know, I had, that was like a 2-year stint of, like, I wasn't looking to get married. I wasn't looking for somebody to, you know, take me to a movie or whatever that was. And so my question, though, is, so here's, do you think that after you experience something like that, that that kind of puts you into a place of where you really are grossed out by it? Because it's almost like, 'cause this is how I'm feeling now, is it's like, you can really see not only how you may have played into it, but what it takes to be that kind of person and how they interact and how they have, you know, you're talking about shallow and no emotion, but most of them are so screwed up and have mother issues and all this other, you know, baggage that they act like they don't have, that you start doing those kind of things. I mean, do you think that that plays into a lot of how old, the older you get, this, your moral, it looks like a moral value, but really it's just like, no, we're not going there anymore. What do you think? I mean,
I think whatever you want as a people, you know, you're going to find it and you're going to relate the way you there. But there's a certain relating that happens between people that's only going to, like, probably just be about that, if that's what you want. My feeling is when I was being a slut, all right, I was a very selective slut. You know what I mean? It's like, you know, I think you had to be wooed a little bit. Somebody, you wanted some charm. You wanted conversation, some sexual spark, you know.
Right. There's always judgment, whether it's poor judgment or not. There's always judgment.
You know, like going, hey, you're good.
Right.
You're fairly decent. I want to go rock it. No, I really, most times still slept with the person, even if it was something that was momentarily or wasn't particularly a relationship, or maybe we were just like real fun people to hang out once in a while. But, you know, I actually had, like, you know, different guys, you know, that I had certain connections with. I wouldn't say that they, you know, and it wasn't one per person exclusively. And if I went out and, you know, I was at a bar and I saw somebody that looked good to me, I smiled at them and flirted, and I would see where it went to, you know, and sometimes it did end up that way. Sometimes it didn't end up that way. But usually it wasn't like this bare bones, like, hey, you want to get some beer and screw? I mean, no, I'm not that girl. I'm still not that girl. I don't think I ever will be. Woman, whatever.
No, and I think women have more, like, even if the intent is something similar to what men feel, I think women do have more suave about things. I mean, because I personally, even if a man is completely sexy and really just, you know, you look at him over and you guys smile back and forth or whatever, and he comes over and he opens his mouth and he is dumb as a rock, that to me is like, I don't care how, like, then the sex is off. Like, everything is out if you're that stupid.
I have been I have to admit, not every guy that I have, like, ended up with was, like, an intellectual, you know, brain. I mean, I do have a pretty good track record on that, but, I mean, there were some guys that were just, like, freaking, I mean, just hot. I mean, so hot that people were, like, going, why are you with him? You know what I mean? Like, I don't know what happened.
Well, because he's Mr. Arkansas.
I was like, fuck, one pecs. I want to look at his abs, and I'm going to have a good time right now. And I went through that for a while.
Well, listen, one quick anecdote, and then we're just about out of time, and I want to direct people to different places and stuff. But one quick anecdote is the only time I ever had a one-night stand in my life was a woman who approached me very much like that guy I was just telling you about. And exactly, just laid it right out, did not even know my name or anything else. It just came right to me and said, you want to do this or not? And that's the only time I ever did that. So, you know, anybody else, I always had to have some sort of an emotional connection before I got physical with them. There had to be an emotional context. Never went for it. You know, I was in a very vulnerable position right after a divorce and all that kind of stuff. So it happened. But But the reality is that, you know what, neither of the sexes is a monolith. We're all very different individuals, but we have to be careful about the programming from external sources trying to tell us how it is we're supposed to conduct ourselves morally, and how it is we're supposed to satisfy our own, you know, real, base, truly natural urges, I think. But anyway, you know what? We're just about at the end here. And of course, like I said, Terry Joyce is heard right here on American Freedom Radio. And her show is Freedom of Joyce. Often it is 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern. Okay. I think it's Tuesday. Is it Tuesday through Thursday, Terry? Wow. I'm stumbling over my tongue. Terry, is it Tuesday through Thursday?
Yes, it's Tuesday through Thursday. The Freedom of Joyce show from Eastern time, it's 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. And I'm right before you on 3 days a week. Yeah.
Right. Every once in a while, I actually do bother Terry enough to show up on her show and pester her. So she'll let me on and talk about something and rail against whatever it is she was talking about. And it's usually entertaining. And I do thank you for putting up with me and indulging that, Terry.
Oh, no, I love it when you come on. Thank you.
And, of course, Sherry Wisdom will be back with me on Monday. But she also does a show of her own. And, Sherry, direct people to that.
It's on Saturday nights from 4 to 6 Mountain Time, 11 to 1 in Ireland, Elemental Evolution on People's Internet Radio. We should be and hopefully will be able to do some podcasting through the show that you and I do and through Elemental Evolution, so people will be able to connect with both and hear the guests and things that we'll be bringing in.
Absolutely. And, of course, Jillian has been a longtime friend of the show, slightly longer than I think Terry, maybe, but she's been on various times and always has a lot to say. Jillian, you're not actually doing a thing of your own just now because you're focusing on your academic stuff, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Chuck, I'd like to thank you very much for having me both today and the other day on the few shows I've done with you. I always enjoy them very much. And Terry Joyce, I adore you. And Sherry Wisdom, I adore you even more.
Absolutely. And thank you, Jillian, for putting up with me as well. And, of course, Lee Camp was our guest in the first hour. And the Ocelli Effect is done, guys. I will see you again on Monday. And I'm not quite sure what I'm doing Monday yet, but... it's going to involve Sherry Wisdom, and I think it's going to be quite fascinating. So I will catch you guys then. Have a good weekend, and stay tuned to American Freedom Radio. Bye-bye.
News and information you can trust. This is American Freedom Radio. Freedom, freedom, American Freedom Radio. Radio. American Freedom Radio.
Nutritious food is real body armor. It builds muscle, burns fat, improves digestion, and feeds the entire body the nutrients it needs. Did you know the U.S. government banned the hemp plant from growing in the United States and classified it as a Schedule I drug to hide it behind the marijuana plant? People have been confused about this plant for over 80 years, and many still don't know what hemp is. So now you know hemp is not marijuana, and marijuana is not hemp. They are different varieties of the same species. HempUSA.org wants the world to know these basic facts and to help people understand that hemp protein powder is the best-kept health secret you need to know about. Remember, hemp protein powder contains 53% protein, is gluten-free, anti-inflammatory, non-GMO, and is loaded with nutrients. Call 888-910-4367, 888-910-4367, and see what our powder, seeds, and oil can do for you. Only at HempUSA.org.
Because, folks, I gotta tell you, when it comes to bullshit, truly major league bullshit, you have to stand back in awe of the all-time heavyweight champion of false promises and exaggerated claims, religion. Organized religion. It's no contest. Religion easily has the best bullshit story of all time. Think about it. Religion has convinced people that there's an invisible man living in the sky, who watches everything you do, every minute of every day. And the Invisible Man has a list of 10 specific things he doesn't want you to do. And if you do any of these things, he will send you to a special place of burning and fire and smoke and torture and anguish for you to live forever and suffer and burn and scream until the end of time. But he loves you. He loves you. He loves you, and he needs money. He always needs money. He's all-powerful, all-present, all-knowing, and all-wise. Just can't handle money. Religion takes in billions and billions of dollars. They pay no taxes, and somehow they always need money. You talk about a good bullshit story. If I may be permitted a small pun, holy shit!
You're listening to AmericanFreedomRadio.com, the network who perseveres in delivering intelligent debate, constructive dialogue with true independence. The freedom to broadcast the truth is not free at all. So what is American Freedom Radio worth to you? The empowering information with fun, honest and pure integrity behind it provides an example to follow. Friendships to flourish with the moral altruism that pulls no punches. The hosts sacrifice and show remarkable discipline in their duty to deliver quality radio in service to the community with strength, wisdom and loyalty. The founders of AFR wish to thank you personally for sharing your views and insights to make the best radio and alternative media. Now it's time for you to give something back and play a vital role in the future of America. Be as generous with us as we've been with you. Click on the donate banner at AmericanFreedomRadio.com or volunteer by emailing AmericanFreedomRadio.com. Vaccines, psychotropic drugs, and artillery batteries not included.
No rules.
No rules.
No taboo topics.
No taboo topics.
No fear of doom.
No fear of doom.
We are.
We are.
American Freedom Radio.
American Freedom Radio.